desert oasis where stories ignite. Skip's little bar, a beacon of light. From the Coachella Valley stars to cool everyday movers and shakers on the show. Join Patrick and Randy, let the stories flow. At Big Conversations, little bar, the magic spreads near and far. Presented on Mutual by the McCallum Theater. Candid tales are shared. Nothing could make this sweeter.
Welcome to the center of the Coachella Valley universe. You've made it to Skip Page's Little Bar with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence. Get ready for another fun and story-filled episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar, presented by the McCallum Theater. Order tickets now by visiting McCallumTheater.org or call the box office at 760-340-2787. Now, in their eighth season, here are your hosts, Patrick and Randy.
I want to give a shout out to the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor, Big Conversations, Little Bar. And this is an exciting week because we get to talk to the head honcho.
Yes.
So you should be very nervous. I've already interviewed Yvonne. She was on Eye on the Desert earlier to talk about the brand new season. Yvonne Bell is our guest. She's the CEO of the McCallum Theater.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I wasn't nervous until he told me I had to be. Why do I have to be?
You had to be. She's a tough customer, that's why.
Okay, we'll see. You got 45 minutes to get through it. Welcome. We're really glad you're here.
Thank you.
We've had a great relationship with McCallum. What have we had, four or five people on now?
At least, yeah. Yeah. We always, you know, we've always liked to highlight, and we had Kaisa from the education department on, and it's always, we've had Gary, the voice of our producer, John McMullen, ladies and gentlemen.
There was Kaisa, there was Gary, there was Mitch Kirschenfeld, and there was Jeffrey Norman.
Jeffrey Norman, yeah. So we've had a nice, long relationship with and looking forward to that continuing, and thank you for coming in. I know you're busy because season is almost, it doesn't feel like it, but season is almost upon us.
Yes, it's almost upon us.
The summer has moved by very quickly.
It's August.
Yeah.
We're planning, right now, we're planning on next season. And so we're trying to get that wrapped up. We go out and actually plan on the Broadway shows. So we're looking at maybe 7 or 8 Broadway shows for 26, 27. We'll get those Broadway shows set, and then we'll put in everything else.
So that's how you build it around the Broadway show, because obviously they have a touring schedule that you have to connect with.
Yep, absolutely. We call them our tent poles.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's very complimentary.
Well, our second tent pole then is the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic, because they're scheduling the big orchestras to come in.
Right. Now, I know they have a phenomenal schedule, including Josh Dudamel from the LA Philharmonic coming in and part of his farewell tour.
Yep, absolutely. Chicago Symphony Orchestra, I think, is coming, and that's a premier orchestra in the nation. But that is, it's an amazing series. And Lee Mills, the head of the Friends of the Philharmonic, he then helped us for this season to round out our classical offerings.
And just so our audience knows, Lee will be with us in the next few weeks.
Yes. That's right. He is very soon to be a guest here on Big Conversations with
Little Bar. His career is about to explode.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I just want to warn you, this is either the beginning or the end.
Great.
There's no middle ground once you appear on this show.
No, everybody has skyrocketed to even greater success. We only have successful people on the show.
That's right.
So, taking over as CEO, I mean, this is a long and storied theater, and you've been involved on the development side.
Correct, since May of 2021.
So obviously you're very familiar, but this is a different role. So talk a little bit about transitioning into that and what the duties now entail. I mean, going out, selecting the Broadway shows, and then filling in the dates.
Yeah, I think I have had so much fun over these past 15 weeks, and it's, I think, 15 or 16 weeks, because I have been able to activate my network, my national network of people. So I can call Casey down at Segerstrom and say, Casey, help me out with this. Or you can call Robert over at the Wallace Center in Beverly Hills. And what are you doing in this case? And that's been a lot of fun. When I started in development 4 years ago, I didn't really need, I knew what I was doing.
That makes it easier to do the
job. Yeah, yes. I don't need any help.
That's why I eventually had to leave my career. I never figured it out.
But I know enough, and then I know what I don't know. And so I'm always benchmarking against what are best practices at other performing arts centers.
What are some of those? Give us an example of something that you might have picked up from somebody else or one of your previous, like at Center Theater.
Staffing's a big issue. If you look, how are you allocating your staff? How many people do you have in this department? How are you getting these things done? In some ways, we're very similar to the Wallace. We're running a season from September, which is early, but that's our new start of the season, all the way through June.
Through June, which also is much later than you used to go.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely. And then you have 2 months that are down or dark, but then you're going. So I'm, you know, for my conversation with the Wallace, it was, so how does your staffing model work on that? How many, you know, how are you allocating? What's your, what direction are you going? So it's just, yeah. It's great.
Now, within this, I mean, there's a kind of a wide camaraderie and network of great theaters in Southern California. You mentioned the Segerstrom in Orange County and the Wallace. When you reach out to those, are you guys competing for some of the same performers?
We're not competing because we're so far apart. If you look at Orange County and Beverly Hills, and I just philosophically, more theater is always great. I think it just makes more theater goers. So I never look at it as competition, even locally, because I want people.
So the Plaza's coming in. How do you guys look at that?
I think if they can really activate that audience in Palm Springs, then I want to make sure that we then pull from that audience over to the McCallum.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you know, being from Los Angeles, we are so close to the Plaza, but it's really hard for people sometimes to go from Palm Desert to Palm Springs or vice versa.
Yeah.
And it's like, really? Try the Santa Monica Freeway, would you?
Right, yeah, no kidding. Well, but that's the thing, you know, I think we all think in scope and scale because I'm in L.A. a lot. And when I'm in L.A., like, okay, it's going to be 45 minutes to an hour to drive wherever. Mm-hmm. But if I'm here in the desert and someone says, hey, like Randy, he lives in La Quinta. He's like, hey, come on down. I'll grill the steak. I'm like, well, that's a long way to go for a steak.
Patrick has to renew his passport. So,
like, there's a border checkpoint between here and there.
We were pretty good friends until he found out where I live.
Yeah, it was like, no. But, you know, you do think in those terms, and so it's right. Funny, but like here in the Valley, people really, if you're driving more than 15 minutes, people are kind of like, I'm not so sure I want to do that.
Right.
And it's funny because when we first moved here, it was nothing to go to Palm Springs, and then eventually it was like, we just passed 400 other restaurants. Why don't we go to one that's a little closer?
I don't mind going to any one of those locations at the farthest reach of the... It's just coming home that's problematic.
We've invited you to stay.
I have dogs that need to go out.
Okay,
that's also a difficult issue. So, all right, not competition, but... And you mentioned they're kind of your support network.
Absolutely.
So, tell me a little bit about... I mean, obviously, you were on the development side and in that kind of world for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, those were your peeps.
Those were my peeps. Yeah, I was at Center Theater Group, which is at the Music Center and operated.
That's three different theaters.
Mark Taper Forum, Amundsen Theater, and then in 2004 we opened the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City, which is a 320 seat house. So that was, and we were a $60 million operation.
Yeah.
And I was there for 22 years, and it was a blast. We were not only presenting, because we had tours come through the Amundsen, but we were also doing a lot of producing. And that's where you lose your money.
There's the hole in the boat, right?
Hole in the boat. And, yeah.
So if you just didn't have to bring in those performers.
Uh-huh. The most successful year at Center Theater Group was the year that we had to renovate the Mark Taper Forum, and it was closed.
So you produced
We didn't produce, and we had Jersey Boys at the Amundsen.
Oh, man.
And I was like, wow. We have money.
How many people does the Amundsen seat?
2,000.
So you're at about 1,700? 1,200?
1,200.
And Plaza's going to be
you
at
were
about
an usher.
7. And I'm going to be again, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good.
Do you know how many seats there are?
I only need to know about the ones in my aisle. well, my section. The difference in those 500 seat difference between the Plaza and McCallum,
mm-hmm.
what is that difference in terms of who you can bring in? Are you competing? Will you be competing with the same people?
I think we want to tiptoe gently around each other, you know, because
yes.
if an artist, I think they're having Lily Tomlin,
right.
You know, we're going to, if we ever got Lily Tomlin, it would be maybe a couple years after that. So we're not,
sure.
we really need to be conscious. Each organization needs to be conscious. But what I find so different is about the two theaters, it's a different audience and
yeah.
artist experience, because it's an intimate feeling at the Plaza. Really intimate, and the McCallum is it's also an intimate feeling, but it's a bigger house. What we've done this season that's been very successful, we started it last season, was our cabaret series, and that's where we do the performance on stage, and it's a cabaret performance with the artists. Their back is to the audience, or to the empty seats, I should say. And then there's round cabaret tables and drinks. And so it's, and I really like that.
That's really cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. So we're also looking at a jazz series at the end of June, which I think will be neat because, okay, it's like, you know, 110 degrees in June, right? I'm like, huh,
on a good day.
On a good day. How do we do that?
Sorry, I had to.
So we're really looking at how do we do it? At the McCallum and just activate the different spaces. And maybe, of course, activate the main stage, but then do we activate the lobby? Do we activate the founder's room? Do we activate the green room? And are you meeting the artists after a set? And how can you have that 3-day pass where you're like, I'm going to go here. We're partnering with Pacific Jazz Orchestra to make this happen. Chris Walden's their artistic director, and he knows his stuff. He has the connections. And I meet with him tomorrow and his team. My directive is let's make this first time successful. And if 200 people come, well, God bless them. They're going to tell everybody,
yep.
and
yep.
everybody's going to be upset they weren't there. So you have to build these things over time.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool thing. I'm going to look forward to doing that.
I've had Chris Walden and I on the desert before.
You have?
Yes.
He's neat.
Yeah, he's a very, very neat guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, you know, you guys, and I was reading when you were named CEO, and you gave great credit to people like Ted Gaddis and Harold Matzner for building what is kind of a juggernaut here.
Yeah.
But that comes with, you know, great, great advantages, but some challenges. What did you foresee? Like, when you're stepping into this, like, here are the things I need to be careful of because, you know, we're building on great success. What were you looking out for?
Wow, that's a really good question. What have I been looking out for? Well, you find the things that work. You're not going to pull the plug on something that's working. But then you also want to question, is it really working?
Yeah.
And you got to turn over those rocks and sort of, you know, and just check yourself. And I think people that have, you know, been there a while, and we don't have a lot of turnover on staff, they're, you know, used to saying, well, we've always done it like that.
Right.
And that I do not want to hear. Like,
so would that be like your fingerprint since you've gotten there is we're not going to do what we've always done.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, trying new things, I mean, I think, first of all, expanding the season isn't, and I know that
huge.
Gary Keefe, when Gary was on here, he said that right up front, that was one of the things that he envisioned, that he wanted to be much more of a year-round, you know, gathering place.
Yep.
And resource for the community, and it clearly you guys are working within that framework.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to, we have an expanding population in the Coachella Valley, And we want to make sure we serve the entirety of the valley. I know that sounds like very grandiose and big, but let's make sure we have programming, that there's programming for everyone. And that includes the programming on the shoulder season, so to speak. Because when it comes November through April, I mean, that's when all the country clubs reopen, right, and there's that push. And that's primarily been our audience in the past. But let's think bigger. Let's think higher. Let's think more inclusive. So
Gary talked about that also.
Well, the, you know,
a more inclusive audience,
right? Yeah. And because you know you have your core audience, mm-hmm, and often your core audience and the people who are the donor class as, yeah, well, there's a big overlap. But you want to reach out. I know that there's a, yeah, big push to reach out to a broader cross section of the Coachella Valley.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so we have to figure out how to do that. Remember also that under Mitch Gershenfeld, the way he sold the season is we did a ticket brochure in the spring, and we mailed it out in March. We added shows, a few shows, and then we mailed another ticket brochure in the fall, and that was it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we're really leaning into social media. We're really leaning into how to leverage our relationships so that, I mean, it was easy back then.
Right.
It's not easy.
People got the brochure and they bought their season and you were kind of done.
We were kind of done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different, and there are, is that attributable because there are more places to go see shows? I mean, it didn't used to be.
That's right.
I know that like Acrisure and McCallum don't compete. They're two different, you know, giant
there's
stadium
a big,
kind of thing versus, you know.
Yeah, there's a big crossover audience though. A lot of our donors, yeah, oh my gosh, they are like, they have their Firebird tickets and no, Anka, no, that's a game night. Sorry. I'm like, wow. So yeah, so they're, I mean, that's what the Firebirds have done to this community. It's pretty, yeah, amazing.
Well, they've
did
also,
you just say Anka? Is Paul coming back this season?
Shh.
He's one of my
like
favorite
anyway
performers.
Okay.
He does not like me. That is true. There's a whole story
keep,
there.
Keep your January open.
Okay.
Oh,
I'm
my birthday month. Oh, okay.
I think I can tell Yvonne this story. It's a funny story.
I think you should. It's
all
a hilarious story.
I will
story
tell you this story because it's a funny story. So I went to see Paul Anka. He was performing not at the McCallum. And I sat down next to, there were three couples. And they were like, well, you're kind of young for a Paul Anka fan. And they're like, well, I've always enjoyed his music. And mm-hmm, and they're like, obviously he's a concert. But I'm like, you know all the songs. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm a fan. And they're like, and I said, well, you guys aren't exactly the same demographic either. And said, well, we're his kids. They were all three his daughters. So at the end of the concert, they're like, you should come back and meet Dad. I'm like, no, I don't want to impose. No, come on back. Let's go meet Dad. Come on, you'll love it. So we go backstage, and I thought like there'd be like this entourage. It thinned out, and by the time we got back to backstage, it was the three daughters, their husbands, and me. And Paul comes out. First daughter hugs, shakes hands with the son-in-law. Next daughter hugs, shakes hands with the son-in-law. Third, same thing. He gets to me, looks at me, and goes, who the fuck are you?
Serious?
Seriously. 100% serious. And
so you probably have a seat waiting for you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on A-list with Paul Anka. I don't know if it's the... But it was because the daughters were like, no, Dad, this is Patrick Evans, and he's the weather guy here, and he's a big fan. And then he warmed up. But it was really clear, like,
yeah,
he wasn't expecting anybody else.
What are you doing in this room?
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So that's my Paul Anka story.
So what are you personally looking forward to this season?
All the dance.
Yeah.
I am so excited about the dance.
Have you guys have expanded your dance
repertoire
this year.
Yeah. We're bringing in Parsons, Body Traffic out of L.A., Complexions out of New York. Complexions was founded by two Alvin Ailey, yeah, dancers. Momix. It's Momix Alice, and the reason I saw him maybe 30 years ago in L.A. at the Wiltern. It is dance, but it is so visual. They have a lot of visual illusions on stage that are so creative that it's amazing.
I was looking at their site today. It's pretty.
Isn't
that's
it cool?
That's going to be really, really cool.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my favorite. Of course, all the Broadway will be a lot of fun. It always is. And our Broadway isn't Broadway that's been a show that's been out there for 10 years. That, you know, we're like, as Gary likes to say it, they're down to two people and a truck. Because they've been on the road so long. And I think that's important. I think it's important to have things that are
You guys current. Have some desert debuts this year with theaters, right?
Debuts.
I think, like, isn't it the desert debut with, like, four shows, I think, that are coming?
Oh, that first here?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That would be Beautiful Noise, Hadestown.
I can't wait to Shucked. See Beautiful Noise.
Beautiful Noise is going to be amazing.
I am, like, such a huge Neil Diamond fan.
First concert I ever saw was Neil Diamond.
Oh, wow.
1969.
Yeah. Wow.
And Beautiful Noise is just an amazing album. Yeah. Have you seen the show?
No, yeah. I haven't. I've seen pieces of it. It did not do well on Broadway.
Yeah.
But a friend of mine had invested in it, and she goes, Yvonne, the only reason I invested is because it's going to do well on the road.
And it has been doing well touring.
Hugely.
So how many of the things that you bring into the theater do you actually get to see beforehand?
The things I've seen have been when I saw them when I was at Center Theater Group. Mm. So I've seen Hadestown. I've seen Moulin Rouge. But that's when I was, because when in LA, I'd be going to New York maybe two or three times a year because we had big supporters back there, our take donors back there. So I hope now in this new role that I start getting to go back to New York. Yeah. The other thing that's really cool we're doing that we've never done before, and that is we're teching The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. And what that means is The Grinch That Stole Christmas, it's been around for a while, but they're mounting a new touring production of it. They have all the pieces together, and they need, out on the road, they need to bring in the actors, the lighting designer, the director, the musicians, everything, to make sure that all the pieces fit together. So they're renting the McCallum for 2 weeks. To get all the pieces together. Our backstage crew will be helping them. And then the last 3 days they're in town, they're going to perform the tour here.
So wow.
In a way.
So it's like their tech rehearsal.
It's their tech rehearsal, and then we're three performances of launching the tour.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. And if we can do more of that, absolutely, I want to do more of that.
So you guys are really trying some new... I mean, that seems something that you guys have not done previously. And the jazz series coming up.
That's right.
So trying new stuff.
Yeah.
Do you see any changes coming up physically to the theater in the future, particularly based on some of the new stuff you're bringing in?
Yeah. I mean,
you got the bar up on the second floor, right?
Yes.
That was really the important thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's where my seats always are.
Was for some of us, certainly for me.
Yeah, and the sippy cups, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's nice to have those because I was an usher right after we opened after COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a very interesting time. There were no sippy cups.
No.
How about LED walls? For visuals with shows. Is that something that the theater's looking at for the future?
Yes. I know that in the New York Times a couple weeks ago, there was a big article on LED visual effects and how so many of the shows on Broadway had it this season. It used to be maybe 10 years ago, you'd see a show and if they used video effects, I'd always roll my eyes and go, oh, that is such a sorry way out of solving that creative problem. You just put a video up.
Right.
But it's not like that. It's gotten so sophisticated.
But I think things like America's Got Talent has really made that an important part of theatrical performance these days because it's so integrated into their production.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, the younger audiences are expecting it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is.
What's that?
I know. I'm sorry, Randy. This is just a conversation for Yvonne and John.
Neil Diamond, 1969. I'm still there.
I think that, you know, and especially if you're going to start to try to attract a younger audience here to do those sorts of things. And, you know,
in television,
we're always trying to figure out what are the kids watching and what is grabbing their attention. So I'm sure for theater, it is the same kind of challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Big time.
You mentioned an increase in potential attendees to the McCallum coming from and maybe an increase in population here in the Valley. How do you guys look at that? How do you analyze and say, here's what's happening in the Valley to help you figure out what you want to do the following year? Is there data that you look at, or are there just people walking around going, it feels like there's more people in town now?
That's a very sophisticated question.
Who should I be talking to?
We will need to get to that sophistication.
Okay.
Really there wasn't a market. When Mitch Gershenfeld was there, he booked everything.
Yeah.
He was the marketing guy. He worked with a designer on the brochure, and he was kind of the one-man show on
that. And you just hoped he had good taste so that he'd be bringing in good stuff. And thankfully, you generally did.
But now we have a marketing department, and it's great. And we're using an ad firm out of New York that is just steeped in theater. Pete Sanders is our fabulous publicist out of New York.
Pete's sitting right over there.
He's worked with a host of theater people on Broadway, on shows, knows everybody. You mention his name and people are like, oh, you got Pete Sanders?
Ooh. Let's mention his name a few more times.
Yeah. No, he's a big deal.
We are going to have to take a very quick break because we're going to pause a moment to hear from the McCallum Theater, our presenting sponsor.
What a coincidence.
And we'll be right back with Yvonne Bell, the CEO of said McCallum Theater.
The McCallum Theater's 2025-26 season is on sale now, featuring audience favorites and expanded programming with more than 20 brand new shows, including 7 Broadway shows with 4 desert premieres. Highlights include a robust offering of holiday events and a great lineup of classical, dance, comedy, cabaret, and more. The McCallum entertains, educates, and enriches the Coachella Valley through world-class performances at the desert's premier performing arts center. We kick off the season on September 10th with the Righteous Brothers. John Lovitz brings his comedy to the McCallum on September 13th. Mexican regional vocalist Camila Fernandez is in concert on September 14th. And on September 21st, comedian Monique Marvez brings her smart, sexy, and self-aware humor to the stage. Tickets are on sale now at McCallumTheater.org or by calling the box office at 760-340-2787. Your entertainment, your theater, the McCallum Theater.
And we are back from the McCallum Theater, Yvonne Bell, who has become the CEO this year, but working in development prior to that for the last, 4 years?
Yep.
Thereabouts. Yep. One of the things you were credited with, reviving the Muse program and kind of reinvigorating that. Tell me about that and the importance that has to the theater and the ongoing operations.
Absolutely. Every nonprofit, three major nonprofits I've worked with in Los Angeles, each had a women's council. And I always leaned into the women's council, because they were some powerful ladies that were married to some important leaders or leaders themselves. So when I got to the McCallum, it struck me that the Muses were kind of over here.
Mm. Oh,
and then the McCallum was over here, and I was like, no. We're all one big happy family. And that has been, so that's been very rewarding. When I first got here, I think they were raising maybe $300,000. And this last year, they presented a check for almost $800,000.
Wow.
So when you lean in and you have really smart women that care so deeply about the performing arts and theater arts education for children, astounding things can happen.
Yeah. We need podcast muses.
We do need podcast muses.
Could we get a group of, would be awesome.
That would be great. If we could get our wives to listen to the podcast, then we might be able to get them.
She's just happy I'm leaving once a week.
That's right.
That's all?
For the podcast.
My wife asked me, what are you doing? I said, I'm recording a couple of podcasts. And she's like, oh, you're still doing that?
Yeah.
That's great. Like,
with Randy?
Thank you for paying attention, sweetheart. I had the pleasure of emceeing the Muses Gala this year.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun.
That's quite a group, women.
It is. And that event is driven by them. They go out and they find the auction items. They think thematically about what this is going to look like, the band, table decorations. They are really into it.
And they're competing against the results from the previous year. So
yes.
They get pretty aggressive out there in the market.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
I was very impressed. And I do a few MC gigs throughout the season. They were very thorough, very detailed. Had a big meeting. Oftentimes, you know, I get an email and say, "Can you MC this? Okay, we'll send you the timeline." We met at the theater. We went over everything. I got a list of all of the auction items, all of the silent auction. I'm like, some of this I don't need, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Did they give you a paddle?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that
of course
that came with it. Hey, I want to get to know Yvonne a little bit. Where are you from?
Los Angeles.
Born in Los Angeles?
Yes.
But you ended up at SMU.
Wow, you've done your homework.
I have LinkedIn like everybody else does.
We were just on the campus of SMU. It's a beautiful campus.
It's a beautiful campus. Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles, and both my parents worked. My mom was a school teacher. My dad was a professional photographer. And I graduated from Westchester High School, right by the LA airport,
yeah.
When I was 17. And this was all before the internet, and my parents couldn't afford. We couldn't go on a college tour. I never even knew that was a thing.
Yeah.
So I signed. I'm like, Mom, I think I want to go to SMU, and I applied to a few colleges. I got in, and I got a partial scholarship, and I never saw the campus. And my parents literally dropped me off at LAX. Said bye.
They didn't even fly with you to.
No, no.
Couldn't afford it. Huh?
I had to take a taxi.
See you at the break.
I took a taxi from the airport in Dallas to Bose Hall at SMU, and my trunk was there. And you know, when you're 17, you think you own the world.
Yeah.
And then you go out into it, and it is frightening.
Is that your first time away from home?
Yeah, to that extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, and it was so different than growing up in Westchester.
What made you pick SMU? I mean, you grew up in LA. There are plenty of great colleges right in your neighborhood.
Well, Dallas was a really big show at the time.
Ah, oh
and
yeah.
And Charlene Tilton went to SMU.
Oh, yes.
The pop culture influence.
The pop culture influence. No, I
would have followed her a number of places.
Well, I wanted to grow up to be Larry Hagman. So yeah.
There you go.
So, I get the Dallas thing.
No, and they had a good, they had a Meadows School of the Arts there, which was it's a really good art school, mm-hmm. continues to be. And I did SMU. I did it in 4 years. It was a culture shock, but I think that's the thing I learned from it. I was like, wow, there's people with fur coats and BMWs. Huh. That wear a lot of makeup and have big hair. Okay.
Really big hair.
So I became...
And they all had guns in the back of their trucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was a good experience, and I kept with it. When I start something, I'm going to finish it. And I tried to beg parents for, what about the 5-year program? And they were like, no. I'm like, okay. So after I graduated, I came back to LA. And I, just because I wanted to work, there was a lot of people at SMU, young women getting MRS degrees.
Yes.
Even
yes.
more of them now, I hear.
Yeah, even more. And so I'm like, okay. Well, I came back and... then I heard this museum was going to be opening on Grand Avenue. And I thought, well, I have an art history degree. I want to go work in a museum. And I started as membership secretary before MoCA opened on Grand Avenue. And I was opening mail and stamping $35 membership checks and taking angry calls from people that because they didn't have their membership card and they didn't have their invitation to the opening.
And you couldn't just point them to a website.
No, I couldn't point them to the website. No, you had to, like, deal with things.
Right. You had to answer
so
the phone.
Much better now.
Yeah. So my joke with myself is I started in the mailroom. Literally.
But you did.
I did. And I learned the whole... I ended up falling in development, and I loved it. I was like, this is great. I get to kind of be the bridge between people who love the art form and... the organization to help that organization succeed.
Did you know you were going to come back to California after SMU? Had you thought that far ahead?
No, I didn't really know. I didn't know what I'd do. I and then at the very end, I'm like, I got to get out of here. I've had enough.
It's too much hair.
It's too much hair.
So, yeah. From the museum, what was your next step?
My next big gig was the California Science Center, the Museum of Science and Industry in Exposition Park. I had been, growing up, I'd go to science workshops there, and it was a hands-on science museum. And so I knew it, but I was hired on to do the campaign. I was hired on to do research on the campaign because they were going to be building and opening the new California Science Center. Mm. And I was part of the team that raised ultimately $131 million.
Wow.
To open phase one of the Science Center. And that's where I got all my campaign experience. And I think what really resonated with me is Exposition Park is in an underserved area of Los Angeles. And I'm like, this is my city. And there needs to be resources. The California Science Center was a free museum. And I was kind of a latchkey kid. You know, I had a key to let myself in because both parents were working.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm like, this is a really important resource. Yeah, that was a big deal.
How have you taken that to the McCallum?
I think I took what I learned at the Science Center, I absolutely took over to Center Theater Group.
Okay.
Because Gordon Davidson, who was head of Center Theater Group, I started there in 99. He wanted a third theater, and that was the Kirk Douglas. And so I was like, well, I can raise that money. We had a model, and we'd lug the model around, and we'd be meeting, and he got us a few meetings with Kirk and Ann Douglas. Well, the final meeting, he goes, Yvonne, come on, we're getting in the car, we're going to their office again. And I'm like, okay. And Gordon was a little like, follow the bouncing ball. But we get in the meeting, he's like having a conversation, you know, with Kirk and Ann, and I think one of their sons was there. And he says, we want to talk to you about the theater. And Yvonne, why don't you talk to Ann about what you need and what we need? And I'm just going to, Kirk and his son and I are going to go out there. And I was like, you little shit.
You just threw me under the bus.
So I asked, I asked for $3.5 million. She said it was a $12 million project at the time. And she says, well, we're going to do $2.5. And I said, well, will you help me raise the additional funds? And she said, absolutely. So they did $2.5. And then maybe a year and a half later, their son Michael Douglas did $1 million.
Wow.
And it was in honor of his father's birthday.
Yeah.
So I've met, you know, been with Kirk and Ann many times. I've never met Michael Douglas. But yes, he's one of those guys that can just write a check and doesn't even need to know what you look like.
You good just, to know. Now I know who we're going to.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. You just say to her.
Do you still have a contact?
We'd like $3.5 million.
That's.
Yeah. It's sort of, we'd like, you always say we'd like you to consider.
Right.
We'd like you to think about.
Did you have any idea walking in kind of what the range was that you'd be talking about?
I did. And
this is pretty brave. That's why I'm asking all these questions.
No.
That's really something to walk into a room like that.
Oh, I think development is it's so daunting to me. And I work with a lot of people in development, and I do a lot of charity work in town. But the art of the ask it's so, there's science to it, but there's so much artistry to it.
Yeah.
I find it intuitive. I've never had somebody get mad at me. I've never had somebody, like, you know, be insulted. And I think it's how you approach it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you're asking for permission. Can we ever have a discussion about this project? I'd like to talk to you about your interests. You clearly are interested.
Right.
So you're asking permission, and you never go into a room with them not knowing what you're going to be doing.
Well, presumably they kind of know why you're there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to make sure.
They are expecting the ask at some point, but gauging where that ask is going to be is, I think, a real skill.
The gulp that I imagined was having the nerve to say, oh, well, could you help us get the other million? that's where I would have passed out.
Yeah, and sometimes you just need to, swallow and be brave and like, okay, because you're doing it in the best interest of the organization, the community, the mission.
And they want to do it.
They want to do it.
What's the most you've ever gotten from a single donor?
At one time or over the course of a relationship, $8 million. I'm thinking, yeah.
That's a good amount of money.
It's a good amount of money. And the donor that did that for me, and this was back at Center Theater Group, she was on the board of Hebrew University in American Friends of Hebrew University. Hebrew University is in Israel, Jerusalem. She was on their board, and she always wanted to go to the board meeting in June. She took me 3 times to Israel.
Wow.
And I was like, yes, I'll carry your bags.
Yes.
And I was in, and a lot of times she didn't want to do the other activities that were being planned. So we'd get other people and play canasta in the lobby of the King James Hotel.
In Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem.
Wow. That's
and
awesome.
I felt so honored.
I'm sure.
I mean, I'm not Jewish.
And I hate canasta.
I mean, in your business, it's all about the relationship. And sometimes those are, you kind of plant a seed for a long period of time before it bears fruition, right? I mean, you're working on this, working with donors, developing that relationship, establishing that trust to get to the point where you can say, hey, now let's talk.
Yeah. And the relationship is the most important thing. So sometimes you don't even get to the ask, to be honest. I will never sacrifice a relationship for money, period. And I won't accept a large donation that
strings attached.
Strings attached, or I know that I cannot, if I accept this, I'm not going to be able to make this donor happy.
Oh.
And I don't want that headache. They don't want that headache.
I'm putting my checkbook away now. I was ready to, but
I had my change purse out. What will this 75 cents get me?
Yeah. I was looking forward to the Patrick Evans Pavilion at McCallum, but maybe not.
So we have an award winner sitting at our table. 2019.
Yes.
You were the inaugural recipient of the Theater Angel Award from the LA Drama Critics Circle.
Yes.
How did that come about?
That came about through a close friend of mine, an actress director who has passed away. Her name was Jeannie Hackett. She was artistic director of Antillas Theater Company in LA. And she'd always come to me and try to learn about fundraising. And I'd help her all the time. And she said, Yvonne, you've done so much for the LA theater community, not just at Center Theater Group, but small companies like mine, and I know that you've helped so many others. Can we honor you for the LA Drama Critics? And I was like, no. She goes, yeah, you need to do this, and I'm so glad I did. It was so much fun. Because I think you can't just care about, Center Theater Group or the McCallum. You have to care about the whole artistic community. And there are so many, struggling small theaters that are producing good work in LA. And it's like, how can we help them? How can I give them fundraising advice? How can the artistic team at Center Theater Group uplift them so that taking a play they've done and then putting it on the Kirk Douglas Theater stage for a 2-week run to get a wider audience, to get more professional artists behind it.
And that kind of stuff is probably more important and necessary now than it has been at any other time because of kind of the war against the arts to some degree or another that's taking place right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the whole NEA, mm-hmm. And there's actually there's a big clash right now about these big organizations. Are you going to take that money that the NAA is awarding you or not?
Right.
And there's a camp that says, I'm not going to take the money. And then there's another camp that says, no, I'm going to take the money. And it's actually the smaller arts organizations that are a bit more socially motivated that are saying, we're not going to take that money. We're not going to take that $20,000. And that's a lot of money in their budget.
Yeah.
And the bigger organizations where you have a 30,000 grant going, 30,000 isn't a lot to these bigger organizations. And they're just like, we don't want to get on the wrong side. Let's just take the money.
Yeah.
So it causes rifts inside the whole community.
Are you having challenges with any funding at the McCallum right now?
No.
Is it most of yours private?
Yes.
Yeah.
Except
Patrick didn't write his check yet.
Yeah. Well,
we're still talking about the Patrick Evans Pavilion. We have,
so that's true.
We have some designs that we need to go over.
This local cities here are very, very supportive. And City of Palm Desert just made a multi-year $1.5 million pledge to us. Rancho Mirage is consistently supportive with, I believe, like $75,000 every year. La Quinta's also been supportive. We're going to start in conversations with Indian Wells. So that's the government support and the pride people have.
Yeah.
It's an important, it's a prestigious institution in this desert, but it provides so much great programming.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, the lights are on most of the, almost every night during the season, you guys are doing something interesting and fun and into it. So let's get back to the season that's upcoming. Tell us some of your exciting picks that you're really thrilled to present this year. I know you're starting to focus on next year, but let's talk about this year.
I brought my program.
I don't know what just happened there, but
I was sitting
on it. Miraculously.
And lo and behold.
She's got a program.
Yes, I have a program because I knew you'd be asking me that. And we do almost like 130. I mean, you expect me to remember all that? You know what we've really built up is the Broadway Legends. And we have Megan Hilty coming out. She was in, I first met her when she was at 9 to 5 at the Amundsen. Mm. She was then in Smash on Broadway and Smash the show. She's a stellar performer. Leah Salonga, she started out with Miss Saigon in London back in the day.
Oh, wow.
Then went to Broadway and actually she won an Olivier Award in London for Miss Saigon and a Tony Award. For Miss Saigon.
Wow.
In New York. We have Alan coming.
Really?
Yes. I am such a fan.
Yeah.
I saw him in Cabaret in New York, and he was amazing. He was also on The Good Wife, but I love his dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
And this is his own show, and it's selling really well. And I'm like, yeah, I'm glad people know how talented he is. Sutton Foster, she's amazing. I don't think she's really dating Hugh Jackman, though.
No.
It's weird.
So
I don't
know. Hugh won't be here?
No.
Sorry, Randy.
Sorry, Randy. Yeah.
Damn it.
She was one. She did Thoroughly Modern Millie in the early 2000s. And then, she's just shot to stardom most recently with Hugh Jackman, The Music Man. And she's done some TV stuff, and she is down to earth. She did The Drowsy Chaperone for us at the Amundsen. She broke her wrist during one of her cartwheels.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Actors get hurt. And they had to, cut out the cartwheel eventually, but she just, kept on going.
Gosh. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, the stamina of some of these people.
I got a paper cut here earlier, but I'm going to make it through
the
show.
We're proud of you.
Yeah, workman's comp.
I see a picture of Jay Leno.
Jay Leno, he's part of our comedy series.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of interviewing the last couple times he's come through, and he's a delightful guy. Just so down to earth, so easygoing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's sold out. I mean,
I'm sure.
Two or three performances.
He's phenomenal. He changed the oil in my car when he came. He loves oil in cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we also we have the lecture series, the Nat Geo, and that's where we bring in the scientists. And I never knew scientists were so articulate and engaging.
Oh no, that's a great series.
It is.
I've seen a couple of those, and they're phenomenal.
They're phenomenal, and they're really good storytellers.
They have to pick the right scientists. Some
yes.
are not.
That's true. But the ones I've seen, I'm like, oh my gosh, they have you hanging on the end of the, you know, story. And I think for me, that's what it's all about. It's being a good storyteller.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then you're just like, okay, and what happened next?
Not wanting the show to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the lion eat you?
I think it may. Pink Martini coming back?
Yes, they are.
But did I just read that their longtime lead singer is...
Meow, meow.
She's leaving the show.
She's leaving the show, yes. But they always bring great artists with them.
Yeah.
And we have Storm Large also in our holiday show. And she's so talented. Yeah.
Can't wait for that one.
I'm so excited.
Storm Large, yeah, as a matter of fact. Storm Large is performing with Michael Feinstein. And I'm going to see that. So they're doing it at the LA Arboretum, part of the Pasadena Symphony Pops.
Yes. Oh, good.
Yeah, my wife and I are going. So.
Yeah, because Michael Feinstein heads that up.
Yes.
The Pasadena Pops.
Yeah, he's the conductor.
Yeah.
I had one of my favorite interviews of all time happen. Two, actually. One was with Barry Manilow on the stage at the McCallum. The other one was with Michael Feinstein, and he did this fun thing. He knew that I liked the song Summer Wind.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, so this is how we're going to start the interview. You're going to pretend to be teaching me the song Summer Wind. I mean, he's just he's a fun guy. He'll do stuff to make the interview fun. So.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And did you?
Yeah, I did. I finally got it right.
Yeah. You didn't have to fire him.
I'm like, come on, kid.
Since you're working on 26, 27, can I make a request to have Rufus Wainwright brought back to the McCallum? I've seen him there before, and I love him, and I see that he's doing a lot of interesting stuff lately. So
you got it.
He was so good a couple of years ago when he was here. He was really good.
Okay.
Really love Rufus. Yeah.
Well, shoot. Oh, I got a list of people. Yeah.
Bring it on.
Can we get David Clayton Thomas back?
Yvonne, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much. I know that you're in the midst of getting ready to open the doors, and you're planning the following season.
I know.
You're super busy, but we appreciate you taking the time to come chat with us.
Well, I appreciate your show, and I appreciate what you do in the desert.
Thank you. And we hope your career has not been impacted by your appearance on this show.
You know, this gig is my swan song. So, hey.
It's good. What the hell?
But this is pretty cool. If you got to go, this is a pretty cool place to go. Huh?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And,
I know.
And, of course, we are so grateful to the McCallum Theater sponsorship, a Big Conversations Little Bar.
Yes.
If it weren't for that, Randy wouldn't be able to afford guests to come here. So it's...
They're not paying the ushers yet.
And they do. It's a volunteer position.
It is a volunteer position.
You're
going
to go back to
it's
that?
It's so much fun. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Very cool. Yvonne Bell, our guest, the CEO of the McCallum Theater, our thanks to you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
McCallumTheater.org. Get the tickets. They're selling fast. Some of your favorite shows are already sold out. So bear that in mind. McCallumTheater.org. Randy, thank you very much. Great
Glad
job.
Glad to be here.
The research department worked
did it
overtime.
Again. Yeah. SMU.
Yes. Pulled that one right out there.
I did.
John McMullen, thank you, sir. He's one of the hardest working producers in podcasts today. I'm Patrick Evans. Thank you for listening to Big Conversations Little Bar. Our thanks to the good folks here at Skip Page's Little Bar. The team always does a great job of taking care of us. They will take care of you as well. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations Little Bar.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Big Conversations Little Bar, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, the center of the Coachella Valley universe. This program has been presented by the McCallum Theater. Learn about upcoming performances and other community offerings at McCallumTheater.org or call the box office to purchase tickets by phone at 760-340-2787. This program is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System and is available from Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Captivate.fm, Spotify, and YouTube. Big Conversation.